Well, spring is still a little ways off, but there are lots of projects that you can do around your home right now. Winter's a great time not only to do projects, but also to plan for some things that you may prefer to do in spring or summer. And maybe you want to get some clutter cleared out of the house. We're doing a little bit of work in our kitchen right now. Larry Mueller here. Glad you could join us on the Ideas Network. Home repair experts Ken Adams of Adams Design Build and John Freiberger of Freiberger & Associates of Fitchburg are guests. They've been coming by for quite a few years now, and they're always happy to pass on what they know to you and to me about things we can do around our home. They have some great advice to share, and I hope you'll join in with your own questions or comments. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org, or post a question or even a photo connected with a question on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. We'd love to hear from you. Ken, great to see you again.
It's good to see you, too. Happy Valentine's Day.
Yeah, to you as well. And John Freiberger, thanks for coming.
Glad to be back, Larry.
It's always great to have you guys come by. And there's a lot we can talk about. I think installation, somebody was saying, I was told I ought to get installation instructions for materials that are being used in my project. What's the, why should we do that?
When we do home inspections, Larry, I'm surprised how often we find that things have not been installed in the proper manner. Yeah. And we're surprised at how many general contractors don't download the installation instructions. And even an old codger like me can be pretty good online nowadays.
Yeah.
And find about anything. And what we're really recommending to homeowners, if you're planning to hire, Smith Construction to put a new roof and new siding on your house, go to the CertainTeed site or the Owens Corning site or the GAF roofing site and download the instructions. One of the other things that's sort of interesting that a lot of people don't know is Wisconsin has a uniform dwelling code, and that's the standard for building the worst legal house in the state of Wisconsin. But the Wisconsin dwelling code states in the code that if GAF shingles say you need to put on X feet of ice and water shield, that supersedes the Wisconsin code. So we come into houses where people have met the Wisconsin code, but they really haven't, because they've done the minimum, but they've not met the code because they've not done what the manufacturer said they needed to do for that product to be warranted. So people really need to do a little bit of work themselves.
I like that. And you can even pass that on to whoever's doing your work.
I think a really great idea is every time I hire Ken, I print out all the instructions that I hand it to him. And I say, Ken, I know you know this stuff, and it's what you're going to do. And that's what he tells me.
It's a lot of bathroom reading.
Well, Larry, you mentioned ice. Larry in Middleton, I think, has an issue with ice dams, possibly. Larry, are you there?
Yes, I have two questions. First question is regarding my house, which has ridge vents. After the heavy snow approximately a month ago that we'll all remember, I think.
Oh, yeah.
I got ice dams. My question is whether a heavy snow like that could block the flow of air through the roof vents.
Well, that's a good question, Larry. It typically doesn't happen because unless the pitch of your roof is very shallow, usually...
No, it's standard for this area.
Okay. Can you walk on it? Is it steep enough that you can't walk on it?
Oh, no, it's easy to walk on.
Okay, so it might be shallow enough that it does block the vents for a period of time. We've seen some times when snow would sit up there and actually the heat from the roof venting would actually melt the snow, and the snow would drip into the house. That happens not very frequently, fortunately. It does happen. It's not normal. And usually it sort of fixes itself. Do you want to add anything to this? Because that's one of those things that it's just kind of it would be an odd thing to have happen.
Yeah,
it is an odd thing. There are two reasons it could happen.
Mm-hmm.
One is that the house is pretty tight and there are no soffit vents, so there's no air movement.
Yeah, that was a question I had.
A lot of soffit vents there.
Okay.
They meet the specs.
Then the other possibility is your house is so well insulated that the attic is staying below 32 degrees. So it is simply not melting the snow off of there, and your venting is really not operating because the attic is really quite cool. So it may be a sign of success.
But that wouldn't cause ice damming.
That's
a different issue.
But he has ice. Larry, do you have ice damming?
I have not until this heavy snow. Mm-hmm. And now this time I got ice dams forming on every roof surface just where they would be predicted to be. That is where there's a little melting and the water runs down until it's no longer over the house and freezes at that point. So it was remarkable to me that I got ice dams everywhere that one would predict they would form and had not had this before.
Well, this is an ideal, the last week or so and has been ideal for ice damming. It's the temperature is warm just enough to help the snow melt, and enough for it to, the ice to reform.
I think, Larry,
these ice dams formed, they formed within about three days after that huge blizzard we had.
Okay. So then Larry does have heat loss because that's obvious, it's melting it. So Larry, the thing to check is you've got continuous soffit venting, you've got ridge venting. Is the airway clear so the cold air can be sucked in through the soffits and ejected from the roof? So you may need to go up in the attic, and there should be a chute between every single truss or every single rafter, keeping the insulation out of that rafter space so that the air can actually move. So that would be the thing to check.
Okay, I will do that. Had it looked at previously, somebody thought there were chutes. Mm-hmm. And the curious thing is that I've not had these ice dams previously. That's why I am suspicious about this blizzard.
Well, if you go up there and take a look, take your cell phone or a camera and snap some pictures all around the place so that you could talk to an insulator if there is an issue. Or certainly you can feel free to send either John or I a photograph, and maybe we can help you with that.
Well, that's very nice of you. The other question I have is that I have ice and water shield under the shingles.
Yeah, that's good.
Put on by a first-rate roofer here locally. But what bothers me is that I know they used nails to hold the shingles in place, and I'm thinking those nail holes in the ice and water shield might allow water to get through.
Well, you know, that is a common concern, but typically, if you buy a good quality ice and water shield, that's sort of a Jell-O term now. There's a lot of companies that make it, and some are better than others, but the Grace Ice and Water Shield is one of the
really good ones.
Really good ones. Yeah, thanks, Larry. And if you stick a nail in it and pull the nail out, it will actually seal up the hole. So these things seal and adhere themselves to nails very, very well. So I wouldn't concern myself with that.
As long as you have a good one.
So, yeah.
Thank you. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Thanks
you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Boy, I tell you, you drive around town there in Madison, and I'm sure this was the same in other parts of Wisconsin. Ice dams everywhere after some of those big storms.
And some of them are insidious. So we have one where the ice was forming inside the wall of the second floor, working its way under the roof of the first floor, halfway down the building and into their kitchen, and they couldn't figure out what the heck was going on.
Oh,
and it's just,
man,
it's just a mess over there.
Wow. Julio in Milwaukee, we'll turn to you next. Thank you for calling.
Oh, thank you for taking the call. Just a quick question. I own a condo, and for about 6 months or so, we hadn't had a neighbor across the hallway, and that neighbor has just recently moved in, and I can hear that neighbor as if they're in my condo. And I'm wondering, is there anything I can do to soundproof the walls, the doors, anything like that?
How old is the building that you're in, Julio?
It was built in the 40s.
In the 1940s. Okay, so they probably did not include sort of sound attenuation that we use nowadays. Unfortunately, Julio, to do anything significant, you're going to end up actually taking drywall off in the inside of your condo. There are sound attenuation mats that are used on walls. The offsetting of studs with a sound attenuating mat is another way of doing it. When we do designs for things like psychiatrist, psychologist's office, we often do a lot of sound attenuating. So it is relatively easy to do. I'm thinking that you might be able to go to the library and look at the AIA Architectural Graphic Standards book. This is a gigantic 1,000-page book you don't want to buy, but it should be in every library, and then you should be able to go to the index and look at sound wall, sound barrier, sound attenuation, and that book should give you a lot of suggestions.
Yeah. There's some great low-tech stuff you might do that could just maybe help reduce the sound a little bit, and that's in the hallway. You could maybe hang a tapestry on the wall with a sound barrier behind it. Those could maybe take up as little room as an inch or so. You try some experiments with carpeting on the floor, either in the hall or in your apartment. Some of these things are kind of low tech and might help just enough to make it manageable.
Yeah,
sure.
Yeah. Good luck. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. I had friends who moved into a new, brand new condo, and they could hear the people above them and below them and to the side of them, and the builder had to go back in and spend a lot of money.
Yeah,
you're better to do it right the first time.
That's right. That shouldn't happen in these days. There's enough stuff out there to.
Yeah, that was, I think, a corner cutting thing that backfired for sure. Carla in Prairie Farm. Hi.
Hi. I have a question about deck railing.
Okay.
When an inspector comes, I know it's like a 4-inch spear that cannot pass through the railing.
That's correct.
How much pressure would you put on that? We put like aluminum cable railing on our deck. And so how hard is the inspector going to push on that?
The inspector should not be unreasonable. Generally, when we design railings that have cable in them, we put the cable at 3.5 inches rather than 4.
Yep.
And so with moderate pressure, yes, you can indeed push a ball through there. It doesn't have to take the 200-pound lateral load. That's the code requirement for failure. But this is not in the Uniform Dwelling Code as to how to test for this. So you sort of hope that you've got a reasonable inspector coming through. If the cables are at 4 inches, I'd be a little bit worried. The 3.5 really is pretty standard.
Yep. I think actually we did like 3.25.
Yes.
It should be all right.
And you probably have a tightening mechanism on them.
Yep.
Yep. Tighten them up a little bit, but you've got to be careful about what's called durational loading. You may want to tighten them, but don't over-tighten them because you'll end up actually warping the metal railings over time.
Yeah.
Yep.
There you go, Carla.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. And we're going to get to David and Mary Lou and Doug, all those folks online. You can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234. Talking with John Freiberger of Freiberger & Associates of Fitchburg, Wisconsin, and Ken Adams of Adams Design Construction in Madison. I'm Larry Mueller. Judith Sears Poisson, our producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you along here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here taking a look at, well, your home and what other repairs and help you might need with that home. Our guests, John Freiberger and Ken Adams, join in at 1-800-642-1234. You can go to my Facebook page. You can post there a question and even an accompanying photo if you want at the Larry Mueller Show. And we have listener Leslie would appreciate a recommendation on the best way to test for radon in a home. She just purchased a home, wondering, how do I test for radon? What's the best way to do it?
The best way is to get a long-term test so you have a real idea. There are 24- and 48-hour tests that give you a sample, but that sample is really only good for that day. And whether you have the heat going in the house or the air conditioning going in the house or the windows open in May and September, makes a big difference to what the radon level is in the house. So we suggest going online, spending about $75 and getting a 6-month Alpha Tracker test kit and go midwinter to midsummer or midsummer to midwinter. So you get some of that air conditioning time, some of that heating time, and some of that time where the mechanical equipment is not operating. And that will give you something that is really statistically reliable.
So you could probably do it about now.
I think you could if you still have plenty of winter going on.
Yeah, might be able to do it now, or wait till July or so, or August, and start it up then.
That's correct. What's nice is these tests are very accurate, and they're also quite cheap.
We have caller Doug suggesting drilling some holes and blowing in cellulose insulation. That way you don't need to take down the drywall.
Well, the problem is a lot of sound comes through the framing. And it's just like heat loss. It comes right through the framing. So Ken's idea is probably actually more effective is to let's buy a nice Persian carpet and and put it on the wall as a display, because that then picks up some of the sound, deadens some of the sound that's coming through the framing.
Well, air is your friend in that, because if you one of the things that we do is put these little channels on to hold the drywall away from the wall, and we create an airspace between the end of the stud and the drywall, and that actually helps reduce the sound.
Right, you're reducing that transfer through the solid surface with those hat channels.
David in Viroqua has a question for you. Hi, David.
Hi. My partner and I are just finishing a super insulated, super tight house. It's just under 2,000 square feet, and we had at framing air leakage rate of CFM 115. Our owners are putting in a dryer now, and we're having to deal with makeup air in a house. It's that tight. Mm-hmm. Now, we have essentially created a closet that it's going in that we could add air into without entering the house proper, but I wondered if you guys had any ideas on how to deal with that problem.
If you're below maybe 3 air changes an hour, you really need to have a heat recovery vent system for the entire house.
Oh, there's an ERV in the house.
There is. Okay. When you designed it, did you design it to tie it into the exhaust fans in the bathroom and the dryer venting?
It's not for the dryer. It goes into both bedrooms, both of the bathrooms, and then there's a general one in the kitchen, because you're not supposed to tie it into the range hoods or anything.
No, not into the range hoods.
But it wasn't designed to be tied into
the
dryer.
Yeah. Well, you may be able to put an atmospheric vent or something like that in the laundry. That's the problem with... The problem is on-demand ventilation gets to be... I mean, we certainly design that, but it gets to be a little complicated to do it just in a dryer closet. Ken, have you dealt with this?
I haven't, but I read an article a while back about some people that were taking some PVC piping and running it underground for several feet, and then it pops up outside of the house, and that was their inlet for fresh air, and so that used the ground temperature to heat the air that was coming in to replace the dirty air that they were pulling out. Now, it seems to me that there's problems that could come with a system like that, like mold and things, and condensation that would happen in the pipe. But I don't know. It might be worth doing a little research and seeing if there's any more follow-up on that. You look
quizzical.
Yeah, that's
kind of where we are.
Well, drag's always an issue when we're bringing in makeup air. And if you get a pipe that's long enough to be effective, it has so much drag that the exhaust fan of the dryer won't pull the air adequately.
Yeah.
Interesting problem for really for the designers of appliances nowadays, isn't it?
Yeah.
Is that we really, with the tighter house standards that are going to be coming online in, is it 2015 that federally is going to be mandated? Ken, I can't remember from reading the articles, but new houses are going to be extremely tight, and operating any kind of appliance like a dryer or a hood fan. Now, hood fans of certain sizes, we already have to have makeup air in residential. But I would expect that what we may see is we may start seeing dryers coming along that have an outside air vent similar to what we have right now on gas-fired furnaces. Yeah.
Fireplaces are like that, too.
Exactly.
So. Yeah, absolutely. David, that's the best we can do for now. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it very much. You can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234. Give a call. Larry Mueller here with my guests, John Freiberger and Ken Adams. And Doug in Mount Horeb, your turn. Hi, Doug.
Hi. Great show. I've got a question about putting windows into a concrete wall. I have a 26 by 52 ranch. It's about 16 years old.
It's got an exposed basement wall on one side. Mm-hmm. I'm hiring a contractor to put 2 6-foot wide by 5-foot high windows into that concrete wall. The inside of the wall has a vapor barrier, fiberglass, stud wall, and then drywall over the top of that. And I have two questions. I've talked to 3 contractors, very well-known and reputable, and they've given me 3 radically different answers. One won't even do the job the way the other two want to. And the two questions are, one, what's the right way to cut the hole through the concrete to make the openings for the windows? 2 of the contractors say they will simply cut a 6x5 opening and support it, build a knee wall, and then take the supports out. And the house, it's on the end wall, by the way, and the end wall will then rest on top of that. The other contractor says, no way. If you cut that much concrete out all at once, you're going to crack the drywall upstairs. There's going to be flex in the house. It should be nibbled in small slices, and the knee wall should be built gradually across the end wall underneath it. So that's one question. The other question is, one contractor wants to put a steel beam over the top of the window openings. The other one says, no, a double 2x12 in wood. And the third one says, forget that. If I'll use micro lambs, whatever the heck that is, which is one of my questions, I'll use micro laminates, which has steel wood composite. That way your windows can go all the way to the top of that wall because it won't be taken up by the space of the 2x12. The other two contractors say, don't use micro lambs. It's unreliable. It's not tested. It's
Lord.
A steel beam or a 2x12. So.
I'll tell you what. Sell the house and go south for the winter. John and I could come up with at least 2 or 3 other ways to do it, too.
Well, if you want to know the exact way to do it, just only talk to one person.
That's right. Well, first of all, it sounds like you're starting out the right way because you're talking to 3 reputable contractors, people that have done this before, I take it. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay,
right.
So, and there are several correct ways to do it. I take it your house, did you say, was built in the 70s? Built in the, how old
was
it?
Yeah, 16 years old.
Okay. Okay.
It's a four inch poured concrete.
For probably 8 inch thick concrete, I would bet.
I'm sorry. What? Eight inch poured. Uh-huh. Yeah.
So, and that since it's the end wall, you don't have floor joists that are perpendicular to that wall. Correct. The floor joists run along with the wall.
Correct.
So that's what makes one of the contractors or 2 of them worried that you're going to have trouble supporting the outside wall and you might have cracking upstairs if you make a 6-foot opening in it. Does mm-hmm. that sound like that's what they're describing? John's busy drawing pictures right here. He's drawing your the sidewall of your house in profile. Jump in, John. Go ahead.
That's right. The joists are parallel to that end wall.
Yes.
And the contractor with the concern says that if you just cut the opening, it's immediately going to flex up above even if you support it. And he said you shouldn't cut the opening 6 foot across. You should make small cuts and start building the knee wall under it and nibble your way across the wall.
Well, I'll tell you, I don't necessarily think that you need to do that. But one thing you want to do is you look up above and see where the windows above are located in relationship to the windows downstairs. Because on the side of each window upstairs, there's going to be a point load because there's a little bit of a beam across the top of the window that are supporting the roof load. But it sounds like that's pretty minimum, too, since this is a gable end wall. You don't
there
have
two,
a lot of weight on this thing.
There are 2 6-foot wide windows directly above the 2 6-foot wide windows that we're installing, and they would all be identical.
Oh, so you have almost no weight on this thing.
Yeah, it's pointed really nicely.
Yeah, yeah, you have almost no weight on it. I would say that nix the nibbling idea. That's just going to cost money and it's going to drag out the job.
And nix the steel because that's overkill. We really don't need that big a header.
Right, and whether it's a micro lam or solid lumber, a 6-foot span is not a big span. If you're worried about trying to get the windows all the way up to the ceiling, there's you could consider putting an extra floor joist in inside if you can access it, because that floor joist could function as your beam. John's got, yep, he's doing the same thing. John just drew that picture with those extra floor joists running right next to the joist that's there, the joist that's sitting on top of the foundation wall. Am I making sense? Are you following that?
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
Great.
Yeah.
So that would be a simple solution. It, because it's a gable end wall, it reduces, there's a lot less load on that. So unless you have a point load coming down from directly in the middle where the roof has a point that's supporting a ridge beam or something like that, unless you have something like that right in the middle of the opening, you should be good to go.
Yeah, that's okay. Even that's going to be transferred into the existing window shoulders. So yeah. This sounds extremely. Yeah. I think what you want to take a look at, Doug, is the size of the current basement joists you have, and then you can make a header above these two new windows that are the same depth. So if you've got 2x8s, you can make it out of 2x8s. If it's 2x10s, make it out of 2x10s, 2x12s.
Or cut down microlams. Your lumberyard
or cut down microlams. And the header should be installed before you do any cutting. But then once you do the cutting, you always will have some small amount of deflection, and that could be calculated very, very easily. My guess is the deflection is going to be in the hundredths of an inch, and you're not going to be able to notice it.
Yeah.
And microlam is that's a proven technology. I went to the NARI show a couple of weeks ago, and one fellow, actually everybody I talked to, said, "Oh yeah, it's proven," except for two who said, "Well, I wouldn't use that stuff." So
well, we use them. You're probably talking to an old timer that doesn't
exactly. He was.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and John and I are becoming old timers, but we still embrace some of the new technology. A microlam, another word for microlam is LVL. You hear that a lot. What they are is basically a really thick piece of plywood that's set on end, and they're machined and engineered to handle quite a significant load. And I would trust any of the major companies. They're very good.
Generally, Doug, they are much stronger than plain old white lumber. And if you look at the International Building Code, you will find that there are structures you can build of engineered lumber that you can't build with plain old 2x4s, 2x6s, yeah. etc.
There you go. Good luck. Thanks
Have
a
fun.
Lot, Doug. Have a good time. Mary Lou in Monroe, it's your turn. Hi.
Well, good morning. I have got a good winter project going on. We bought an older house, and try as we might, we cannot stop the toilet from running. It's intermittent. We fix the insides. It hangs on really nice for 2, 3, 4 weeks, and one night it runs all night long. So I just figured we just need to put a whole new toilet in.
Yep.
But I go to the store, and I look at the rows and rows of all the different toilets, and some of them are $79, and some of them are $279.
Mm-hmm.
What toilet should I buy?
Well, that's a good question, because even some of the big names have different levels of quality. But typically, we have great luck with companies like Kohler, which is a Wisconsin company, Toto, which is not a Wisconsin company. I think American Standard is another good quality company. There's a number of them out of there. I would walk run away from $79 toilets, because probably what you have is a fairly inexpensive toilet with the internal mechanisms that cause the flush and shut it off and all of that stuff. That's not very good. Another interim step you might do is you can get a kit from like a local Ace Hardware. I can't remember the name of it.
Already tried that. Okay. We put a whole new insides in.
Yeah. But if you're going to get a toilet, definitely worth getting a good one. You can get low flow toilets. Good news is sometimes you can get significant rebates for buying a higher efficiency toilet. So check. I didn't see where you're calling from, Mary Lou.
Monroe.
Monroe.
Yeah, and I'd like a low flow because we do have a septic system.
Sure. You can get a dual flush. You push one button and it flushes just a little bit, and you've hit the big button and you get the works.
And so, those work okay?
The better quality ones do.
Yeah, we have a good quality. I don't really remember what we paid for ours, but they were...
It was like $400, I think.
Yeah, I shuddered a little bit, but I tell you, they work great.
And you use them so often, it's worth getting a decent one.
Yeah, I just don't want to spend the time and the effort of doing what I hope is a once-in-a-lifetime job and then turn off putting in a bad toilet.
Who's going to install it for you?
Me.
Oh, good for you. Good for you. Get an extra, because they have a little beeswax ring you buy.
Wax ring.
Mm-hmm. Buy a couple extra. And just, they're only a buck or something. You just stick it on the shelf because they'll last forever. And if your toilet ever loosens up and you want to tighten it down in the future, pull it off, put a new wax ring on and tighten it back up. Just have that extra part. And don't do it on a Sunday afternoon at 4 o'clock, because you'll never get parts if you need them.
No. And you
we're lucky. We have two bathrooms anyway, so I guess I can turn the water off and use the other one if I really mess up.
If you know any plumbers, you could talk to local plumbers and see what they recommend. But if you stick with the name brands, like I say, Kohler, American Standard, Toto, whatever, can you think of any other names off the top of your head?
Those are all good ones.
Mansfield. Well, Mansfield has, they have a wide range of
quality.
A wide range.
You need to be at the upper end, as you said.
So check those out. You'll be happy. There's also the adult height one that's kind of popular now. It's just a little taller than the little ones that you've had. So a lot of fun features.
Depending on how good your knees are, you might want to go with a taller one.
Is the problem. I just wanted to go and buy a toilet, and there were too many to look at.
Well, now you know.
Good luck to you.
Sounds good. Thank you.
Thanks a lot for calling. You know, we got the one, too, that you hit the seat. It starts to fall, and then it slows down and sort of slowly.
Yeah, that's the newest rage. The seats that have a little compressor or compression fitting in there that slows the fall of it, so the seats don't slam down.
Yeah, but I do notice if I go somewhere else and I forget, I'm slamming down somebody else's.
When the grandkids come over, we race the seat with the lid and see which one wins. The seat always wins.
Oh man, Blake and Campbellsport, your turn. Hi, Blake.
Hi, good afternoon, and thanks for the forum, and especially the tip on downloading instructions. That's good stuff.
Yeah.
I have a comment and a question, please.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
The comment is to, maybe it's valuable for listeners to know how very easy it is to obtain a builder's license. I found it, I'm living proof of that, I found it more difficult to get the licensure for pouring concrete than to build an entire house. And so, you know, it's really not an indication that someone is as good or accomplished or anything else, but it is a start. My question for you is, when we did build houses, they were at the point where you're trying to make them tighter and tighter and with radon and sealing up the basement. We steered people away from house wrap, and I wondered what the current philosophy is on that. Thank you.
All right. Thanks for calling.
Do we have an hour?
Yeah.
Blake, that's really a good question. And the reason it's a good question is we're finding a high failure rate in house wrap. We're finding failure rates, especially where people are applying cedar or siding or any other wood siding to the exterior of a house that has tannic acid. We're finding that the tannic acid acts as if you've applied a surfactant to the house wrap, and the house wrap starts leaking.
And house wrap, you mean Tyvek?
Yes, Tyvek, right.
Those white paper wraps.
Exactly, the manufactured type. And many lumber yards have their own. You know,
they have their names on them.
That's right,
stuff.
The Smith Lumber house wrap, et cetera. Mm-hmm. However, I'm a big believer in them because we do need to stop wind. There really is no other way of providing a wind barrier around the house other than using a house wrap. But what we have specified for years is that you put a house wrap on, then you put a layer of old-fashioned 15-pound felt over the top of it. And part of that is that the felt protects the house wrap.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
When you nail through the felt, it has a little bit of sealing ability that the house wrap doesn't. So I'm finding that unless you're going, Blake, to such things as the liquid-applied barriers and those sorts of things, which, are fabulous but very expensive, that the house wraps are still necessary, but we have to know their limits, and we have to know that they can fail if we get them in contact with certain materials.
They don't fail quite as often when they're behind, like a rain screen system, do they, John?
It depends upon what you're using for your strapping or your batten on the rain screen system. I would be very concerned of having house wrap against even a treated lumber. I think even on rain screen, we are putting on the house wrap, and then we're using the old-fashioned felt.
Yeah, and for those of you that don't know this, a rain screen system is a method to keep the siding keep an airspace between the siding and the house so that moisture can and heat can wick away behind the siding, and it's a very nice way to do siding, wood siding cement board.
It's really the only way of doing wood siding if you want it to last for a long time.
Mm-hmm. Yep, there you go. Thanks, Blake. Thank you very much for calling. Don in Rice Lake, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yes, hello. A good program, and thank you for taking my call. I just had a little tip for, you've had some callers call in about soundproofing?
Yes.
Something? Well, I was in the recording business for years, and we had a recording studio out in Denver, and some of the things we used to stop sound, like in a recording studio, like you'll have a drum booth, and that sound has to be stopped totally so that it does not get out in the other room.
Yeah.
And one of the best ways is to take, the simplest way in a house would be to take, like if you have half-inch sheetrock, mm-hmm. and if you build so you can have three layers of sheetrock with like a 2x2 strip between or something like that, use half-inch. And on the other side, use 5/8 inch, and then 1/2 inch again. If you only can have two pieces of sheetrock, one on one side and one on the other, use 1/2 inch, and on the other side, use 5/8. It'll stop a lot of sound. Sound thinks, and like if a sound hits 1/2 inch, and it'll think and go right straight through, and if it hits another 1/2 inch, it's already thinking 1/2 inch, and it goes right on through the next one, and it'll keep right on it going. It'll just get a little quieter each time. Insulation does nothing but just muffle the sound a little bit. But if you take 1/2 inch on one side, 5/8 on the other, will stop a lot of sound.
Hmm. Really?
And the other thing, like in the control room, like for the engineers where they have glass where they can see through to the musicians playing in the other room, they'll have like a 1/4 inch piece of glass, and then the next piece of glass would be 3/8 inch, and it'll be on an angle, on a slight angle.
Yep.
And on the other half, on the outside, then would be another 1/4 inch glass. And you can do the same thing with sheetrock if you have the room. You could put up a wall, and then on the next sheet of sheetrock, angle it,
yeah.
You know, like say from the bottom up to the top, whatever room you have, if just 6 inches in there, you just angle it that much so that the next piece of sheetrock would be on an angle. And when sound hits that, it gets confused and it will not go through.
Those are all good tips. As you were talking about it, Don, I was looking around our studios here, and you know, as you were mentioning the angled windows, and the window setup, it's pretty much exactly as you've described it, is what we have in our studios. And I'm in one studio, and I'm looking at three other studios, and there's glass all around. But frankly, you don't hear. I see Judith's smiling face, but I can't hear her unless she talks in her microphone to me. So those are all very good tips. Thank you. Thanks very much. And tell you what, we got lots more people online. John Freiberger, Ken Adams, our guest today. John with Freiberger & Associates of Madison. Ken of Adams Design Construction in Madison. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Glad to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here with Ken Adams and John Freiberger. Talking about your home. If you got a question, what's going on with your home? Repair or homeowner assistance needed? Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. Email at talk@wpr.org or go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. You can post a question, a photo, right there at The Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. Facebook question from Kathy. Do gutter guards increase the chance of ice damming? What do you think?
I think that if ice is building up in the on the roof, it's another place for it to stop and build up. I don't think it contributes to ice damming. It may just divert the dam out of the gutter and over the side a little bit more. So I would say, I would have to say no.
I don't think I've had enough experience with them to really give an opinion.
Mm-hmm. I know what happens is it tears it up if you try to break the ice out and you've got gutter guards. It'll
yeah,
tear it all up.
I've got gutter guards. We don't have ice damming on our house.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We have an email from Stevenson, Michigan. We're having a pole building put up this spring, but would like to finish the inside ourselves as a garage/workshop office. Our current thought is to have the shell built with windows, doors, and insulated concrete floor. We do the inside walls as a winter project next winter. Is this a good place to stop in the construction, or are there other tasks we should really consider letting the contractor do when it's built initially? Are there other things? What do you think, John?
Well, it'd be nice to be able to see the design. The question is, are we going to have two complete outside wall systems, one of them being a self-supporting steel system and then a stud wall system inside? Is there a way that we can do some savings if we only have a single wall system? Is there a way that we can insulate that steel wall system and still be able to put finishes on the interior? So I think I would think about the design a little bit. Be sure when you talk about an insulated concrete floor, you're going to insulate under the floor. Make sure you insulate around the floor as well, that you have a thermal block. And that thermal block, where that is installed, is going to depend a little bit upon your insulation. So you really need to design your entire wall system and insulation system and then take a look at it, talk to your contractor, and see what's logical.
Yeah, we're in northern Michigan there, so it's going to be cold.
Yes, it is. So you're probably going to want to take a look at high-performance materials, but high-performance materials get to be expensive. So looking at a couple different ways of providing a thermal barrier around this garage workshop is probably a good idea. Ken and I are always telling people, come up with a complete plan before you start anything. In fact, if you're thinking about doing 3 or 4 projects over 10 years, you need to come up with a 10-year plan so you don't do something that you regret later or that costs you more money because you're replicating what you could have done earlier or replicating what you've already done earlier.
That's a great Valentine's Day gift to our listeners.
Yeah. Dennis and Madison, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi.
What can we do for you?
I'm making an addition on the south side of my house, 16 by 24. It just has a crawl space, and right now I just had the joists out, and I could see the earth. I put styrofoam on the outside. The cement sticks up 2 feet out of grade, goes down 42 inches. I just dug it and made some forms. I plan on putting plastic down over the dirt. And then should I have styrofoam on the dirt and then the plastic and then some sand or pea gravel? Or can I just put plastic down? And then on the joists, should I insulate on the bottom side of the joists with pink board? Basically, with a crawl space like this and kind of a cheapy addition, what's the best way to insulate?
Well, you started by putting an inch of insulation on the exterior, so that's helpful, and that I'm sure is going all the way down to the footings, so that gives you your R5 or R6 down there. Now, this crawl space has to be vented either to the interior or to the basement. Sounds like you're probably venting it to the basement. Is that correct?
Well, that's a good thing. That's what I'll do.
Yeah, because that's a code requirement. It has to be a vented crawl space. So let's say it's going to be vented to the basement, because if you're going to run heat runs through it, those are going to then come through tempered space. So then I would go ahead and put foam insulation down on the gravel with the visqueen over the top of it and maybe pea gravel over the top of that, making sure that you caulk that visqueen to the outside wall so it's really a complete seal. Considering how small this is, you might even take a look at a membrane that would be a little better quality than visqueen, and at least try to get like the landscaping visqueen, that 20 mil thick black stuff that's really heavy and hard to tear. Now, if that space is well insulated, there's absolutely no reason for you to insulate between the floor joists, because what you'd be doing is separating a warm space from a warm space, which, you know, would be a waste of effort. So, like we were just saying on this garage metal building, is do a complete plan, figure out where your thermal barrier is, and make your thermal barrier as complete as possible. Remember where you've got your ring joists on top of the concrete wall, that needs to be well insulated, at least to R19 with friction fit insulation. But if you can afford it, have somebody come in and do a two-part urethane spray up there, because that's an area where you get a lot of heat loss due to air infiltration and exfiltration. Ken, anything to add to that?
No, that sounds like it's pretty comprehensive. Do you have a permit on this?
Yeah.
Uh-oh. Okay.
Okay, well, your building inspector can maybe help give you some advice, too, because he'll definitely want to see this as it progresses.
Yeah, absolutely. Good luck, Dennis. Thank you for calling. And Nancy in Grafton, hello to you.
Good morning. I need to replace my kitchen floor. It's an old house, and right now there's a...
Ah! We lost her. Oh, Nancy, I hope you're still listening. That's really too bad. I had already a recommendation of my own in mind. If she was asking for the kinds of for a type of material,
what would you recommend, Larry?
Well, I'm telling you right now, we put cork. We mm-hmm. put cork in our kitchen, and it is wonderful. Especially, you spend a lot of time on your feet in the kitchen. You know, you're working around the stove and that, and then the cork is just absolutely wonderful.
Yeah, it surprised me how well it holds up to. So if you get a good quality cork, and know, if you buy it from a U.S.-made company, it's typically a green product, too.
Yeah, so if that was your question...
We're anticipating the answer.
That's something I highly recommend. We put that in our kitchen, and I'm telling you...
Well, I hope she calls back.
Yeah, we really enjoy it. Brogan in Eau Claire, hi, thank you for calling.
Yeah. I'm in a 1950s home, but it's had a lot of updates to it, but the walls aren't insulated, and I've read a little bit about having that blown-in insulation done, and I've kind of seen contrasting recommendations on that, and it has vinyl siding, the recommendations I've seen, some say, oh, yeah, the blow-in insulation is great, but then others say, oh, once you get it done, it gets moisture and it just sinks all to the bottom.
Well, that's well,
and gets like moldy and all that. And so I was like, well, I'm not really sure what the best method to get better insulation in there is.
Well, if you had a historic house, Brogan, what the Department of Interior would say, if you want to insulate the walls, you have to put a complete vapor barrier on the interior on all exterior surfaces, because the what we found in historic houses, and yours isn't historic being 1950s, but it's going to perform just like an 1880s house, is yes, indeed, you could get condensation inside the wall, and it could indeed get moldy, and it could do a great deal of damage. The good news is you can put on a liquid applied vapor barrier paint. All it is an acrylic latex enamel that's been certified by HUD as being a vapor barrier. You can tint it just like any other paint. I know that Glidden makes one. They used to call it Insulade, but they changed the name. I think you'll find most of the major manufacturers make one. The other thing that you need to do is you need to seal all outside penetration. So like where the outlets exist, you need to get in there and try to foam around them, or at least put those little foam pads on, so that you don't have air infiltration coming in. I think as long as you do that, then it does make a certain amount of sense to go ahead and insulate the walls. The other thing to think about long term is vinyl siding isn't forever, and someday you're going to have to change it. And just like sound, which we've been talking about a lot, heat is the same thing. It moves right through the framing. So some year, when you replace the vinyl siding, put an inch of urethane foam on the exterior of the house, put a good wind wrap underneath that and protect it well, and then put the vinyl siding on, and you should be able to take your 1950s house and meet current standards. In fact, if you do it carefully, you can exceed the current energy standards in the state of Wisconsin for a brand new house.
Okay, and that paint, that goes on the inside or the outside?
You know, it goes on the inside.
Yeah.
Okay.
It goes right over your drywall.
All right, and so then when I take off or replace the siding, add an inch of a wind wrap and an inch of...
well, no, just a wind wrap. Wind wrap is very thin.
Yeah, but then an inch of...
An inch of, and take a look at how the various exterior foams work, because some of them are 20% better than others.
Ah, something to think about. Thanks a lot for calling, Brogan. Our guests today, Ken Adams and John Freiberger, they'll be with us until 12:30 today here on the Ideas Network. Stay with us. Like so many things in life, it can be a little too easy to not pay attention to our home's upkeep until something goes wrong. Inevitably, something needs to be fixed. We need advice we can rely on. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Glad you could join us today on the Ideas Network. My guests today, general contractors Ken Adams of Madison and John Freiberger of Fitchburg, they come by every couple months to help us out. They have a lot of great advice to share. They're with us until 12:30 today, and they are happy to answer your questions. You can call at 1-800-642-1234, email us at talk@wpr.org, or go to my Facebook page. You can post a question and an accompanying photo if you think that'll help. We'd be love to take a look at it. You just need to go to the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. Click like while you're there. We'll send you regular updates on upcoming show topics. Back after the news. Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Really great to have our guests today. John Freiberger of Freiberger & Associates of Fitchburg. Ken Adams of Adams Design Construction in Madison. They can help you save some money on home repairs and give you great advice. All you have to do is call or shoot us an email or go to my Facebook page. You can call us at 1-800-642-1234, email us at talk@wpr.org, or again, my Facebook page, just go to the Larry Mueller Show. You can post a question or a photo right there. And Peter in McHenry, Illinois, waiting a while, we go to you. Thank you, Peter.
Hi, thank you, Larry. It's a thrill to talk to you. Thank you. Real quick, I've got a house that's about 13 years old, unfinished basement, poured concrete wall, have never had any water issues whatsoever. I'm planning to start a refinishing project in half the basement probably in the next week or two, and I hear mixed information about needing some type of a plastic or vapor barrier down if it's a code thing, if it's necessary. What's the standard procedure for doing that?
Hmm. Well, my understanding is the current codes now on a basement foundation wall require that you don't have a vapor barrier between the insulation and the outside wall. So the current code says no. What we've been doing is foaming, using a two-part polyurethane foam in that in the wall cavity, so we'd frame in our wall, insulate with a two-part polyurethane foam, and then you may or may not use a vapor barrier over the top of that. We don't, and the reason we don't is that moisture can come in from the outside in a basement wall much more readily than it could come in from a regular framed wall, so we don't want to trap that air in there.
Okay. Yeah, that was my thinking, too. If it's a fairly dry basement, mm-hmm. Not putting anything in there that's going to cause moisture to get trapped. Regarding the two-part foaming, I had kind of planned to put the sheets of the expanded foam in between cutting them and putting that in.
I'm sorry to interrupt you, but you can do that, or you can use extruded foam, which is a little more of a green product. It doesn't have quite the insulation value, but it is considered green, and it is or greener, let's say, and it is less expensive, so that's an option too. You've got 3.5 inches to fill.
Mm-hmm. All right, great.
All right,
one other follow up, if I could, just
sure.
The 2x4 or the treated runner that goes along the floor, which I guess is the code, mm-hmm. and you put your studs on top of that. As far as fixing them to the floor, I see the mechanical attachments where you drill the pilot hole and you put some type of a, like a lag shield in there. I see the type with the cartridge that you pound and it fires it into the cement, and then I see where you drill the pilot hole and use kind of a hardened screw. I mean, which is the preferred method? You know, what's the best thing to do for that attachment?
I really like the final one, the where you drill, you actually drill the concrete in the wood, and then you put the usually they're blue.
Yep.
I'm sure there's
Tepcons.
Yeah. I really don't like the noise from the firing, and sometimes if your wall moves, you've got an issue. The nice thing about the Tapcons is if you've got an issue, you can unscrew them.
Yeah.
Sure. Yep. Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Yeah, thanks, Peter. Appreciate the call. And Ruth and Madison, hello to you.
Hello. I have another basement question for you, Larry.
All righty.
Okay. I have a 1957 year-old house, and I have a crack in the basement concrete wall. It's unfinished, and the crack runs from a window well down to the bottom, and during rain, dirty water comes in. Fortunately, there's a drain right there, so there's not a wet basement problem. But I was wondering, can that crack be repaired from the inside, or does it mean regrading from the outside?
The answer is yes. you can probably fix it from the inside. There are contractors in Madison who do pressure-injected epoxies, and that will structurally seal the crack and should also be able to water seal it. Depending upon their confidence level, you might be able to get a 10 or even a 20-year guarantee on it. But remember, on the exterior of any house, we want a half-inch per foot grade dropping away from the house for as far as you can make it, or up to 10 feet. So let's get the water away from the exterior, because if you seal this crack and you still have ponding of water against the wall of your house, it may find some other place to come through, like the snap ties.
I see. Well, there's also a little bit of water sometime coming in from the top of the basement wall in the same area. And unfortunately, right outside is a deck and also concrete slab patio.
Oh dear.
Oh, dear.
Kind of difficult a grading problem. Mm-hmm.
Well, did they build the deck on top of the slab patio? Or is it next to it?
Next to it.
Oh, that's a little better.
The problem we always have with these concrete patios is they seem to slope towards the house many times because there was excavated soil next to the house that subsided. So you're going to need to check to see where that patio drains. What you can often do on a patio is replace part of it, the part next to the house. They can come in and saw cut it and then pour a part next to the house with a closed joint between the patio and the wall so that the concrete will slope away and that the joint is sealed. And there's a lot of good contractors in Madison that can do those sort of simple jobs for you.
Excuse me, and what sort of contractor would one get for that?
Why don't you send me an email at FREI at chorus.net. Chorus like a group of singers, C-H-O-R-U-S, and I can give you the names of probably half a dozen different contractors who'd be happy to look at it for you, as well as people that do epoxy crack work on basement walls.
Okay, thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And Elizabeth in Stevens Point. Hi.
Hello.
What's you got a problem?
Yeah, we have a home that was built in 57. We bought it about 6 years ago. And before we bought it, the home had some siding replaced completely, and now the siding has been falling off.
Oh man.
Ah, yes, probably smart side.
What kind of siding is it? Or do you know? Losing your signal. Are you on a cell phone?
No, it's vinyl.
Oh, it's vinyl. Okay.
Oh, so the siding's falling off.
It's 4 or 5 inch.
Mm-hmm. Is it just flapping in the breeze? Is that it?
It's flapping in the breeze. It's also fallen off several places on the house and on the garage.
Typically, when I see that, it's because the contractor or whoever applied it didn't use long enough nails so that they were nailed into the meat of the wood behind it. And they also held the siding often. They put it in too loose, or I mean, they could have put it in extreme weather conditions and not allowed for the changes, because vinyl siding moves quite a bit. This goes back to something John had said at the beginning of the show about getting the manual and understanding what the installation process is. So the good news is that unless there's rot behind it, which is probably unlikely, but unless there's rot behind it, you could remove that siding and reinstall it and do it a nice job. That's the one of the nice things about vinyl, without having to actually buy new siding.
Mm-hmm. Just get some longer nails.
Yeah, make sure, yeah. Well, you want to read the instruction manual, or you want to hire somebody that knows how to put vinyl in, because I see a lot of people that put it in improperly. Some people just nail it in tight. You can't do that either, because then it buckles on you, because it's vinyl is made to slide around on the nail, so you don't want the nails in tight. You want the nails to be just out far enough so that the vinyl could move on it. Does that help?
Mm-hmm.
A little. All right, thank you.
Good luck. Bye-bye.
Thanks for calling. Kurt in Cornucopia. Hello. Kurt, are you there? Huh. A little issues here suddenly. Karen in Franklin, let's try you. Hi, Karen.
Hi. I have a question about tankless water heaters. Our house is about 12 years old. And we have a standard 40-gallon water heater, so the standard pipes for the water. And I'm just wondering how expensive it is to put in a tankless water heater for that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's no question they're more expensive than putting in a high-quality tank heater. The upside is, though, that the expense is paid up front, and there could be significant savings over the life of the hot water heater. Years ago, people would put them in, and they would be exorbitantly expensive, and they wouldn't work well, and you wouldn't really be happy with them. But things have gotten ironed out pretty well, and there's a number of very good units out there. So, have you talked to a professional about this at all?
Not yet. We were just thinking about doing that. Considering the water heater is 12 years old now and would probably have to be replaced pretty soon. Mm-hmm. And if we were to do that, is that something where we would have one unit, or would we need to put one on both levels of the house, or how would that work?
Well, and that's a really great question, too, because some people can get away with having one unit. They also there are manufacturers that make small portable single-use units, so that you'd have one, say, by your bathroom sink, next close to your kitchen sink. They're usually electric, and so they cost a little bit more per BTU to heat the water, but the fact that you're only using them for very short bursts of time really helps keep the cost down. Plus, the installation of each one of those is a lot less than it is to put one large unit in, capable of handling the whole house.
Okay. I think we'll look into it then.
That's worth a look.
Remember to go to Focus on Energy to take a look at the rebates. I believe it's $125 right now for tankless, though I haven't looked at the website in 3 days.
Yeah, so you might get a little bit of money back from that.
Okay, we'll do that. Thank you.
Thanks, Karen. Dan in Monona, hello.
Hi, how you guys doing? I have a 1950s ranch in Monona that has very tired vinyl siding. I'd like to replace the vinyl siding, but underneath the vinyl siding, I believe, is the original wood lap, like either 8 or 10-inch sort of horizontal lap siding. My question is, do I need to remove the original wood lap siding before if I decide to put up pink board insulation and then the new siding over that, or can I put do I need to remove it sort of down to the stud, so to speak, before I put up the pink board insulation and then the new siding?
Dan, I think that you'll find is that old wood siding is probably over either plywood or wood board sheathing. So there should be exterior sheathing that is structural with the house. There are some really weird things we find right after the Second World War, but most of those are gone by about 1953 or 54. But do a little bit of digging. I think you'll find there's board sheathing. My preference would be to take it back to the board sheathing and check the board sheathing. If you have any doubts on the nailing of it, structurally screw it back in place. Then go over it with as much insulation as you can think of. Check the interiors of the walls. If it was built in 1957, it might only have an inch and a half of insulation in the wall, so you could introduce insulation from the exterior. Then you can put a wind wrap on the house. Then you can put a foam insulation on the house, and then install your new vinyl siding, detailing the windows very carefully to make sure you have absolutely no air leaks. Again, with that sort of system, you can meet the current Wisconsin Energy Code, or you can even surpass it. But think of good design first, and do a complete job on it.
Gotcha. Just one follow-up. When was wind barrier when was that invented or started to be used commonly?
Mostly in the 12th century.
Yeah.
Except back then it was called stucco. The reason we see a lot of old stucco houses from the 1880s, 1890s is people now had central heat and they wanted their houses warm. They didn't want the draft, so they used stucco. So stucco is really one of our first. In the 1890s, we have the development of tar paper. And tar paper becomes not just a water barrier but also a wind wrap. So every year we get a little bit better. And if you still want a really tight house, wind wrap, tar paper, and stucco is great.
Yeah.
There you go.
Well, thank you very much, Phil.
Yeah, thanks, Dan. Thank you for calling. And David, in Maple Lake, Minnesota, hello to you.
Yes, sir. How you doing? I enjoy your show and listen to it often.
Thanks.
My question is, I'm looking at building an earth-sheltered home in the summer, hopefully. And I'm getting a lot of controversy between block or poured wall. And I'm wondering what your thoughts are on that.
All right. Well,
we both
Ken,
have this.
You're going first.
Yeah, John and I both have this little bit of a, grin on our face. Block has value in a lot of instances, but in a situation like this, I would stay away from block. Block is very porous. It'll be very difficult to seal it up on the outside. I assume that one of the reasons you're thinking of block is it might be something that you can either do yourself or might be able to save a couple bucks on. Is that, you know?
Yeah, there seems to be a pretty big difference in the price and who, you know, is competent in doing it.
Right.
And
waterproofing it's going to be much more difficult. Not to say that it's impossible, but it's one of those things that things go wrong, it can be very expensive and very unpleasant to have it fixed. I think that you might be better off if you consider the expense over the lifetime of your house, you might be better off going with concrete. But there again, it's very important that they get the weatherproofing on the exterior correct.
Correct. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Do you have any thoughts on the electrical being buried in the floor and conduit and pulled that way rather than going around the total perimeters?
Oh yeah, I have no problem with laying conduit and pouring around it because you can change wiring. People have done things like put vents, heat registers in poured floors, and a lot of these things can be really problematic. But if you're running chaseways, you should be okay.
Okay, yeah, because we were looking at doing that and then the in-floor heating, Weir's Bowl style type thing.
Yep.
There oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Would you do that in the concrete or would you put that on top of the concrete?
In the concrete.
Okay.
And what I've been told.
And you'll be insulating it well from the under the floor, too.
Yeah.
Are you working with an architect to design this project?
I'm beginning to realize I'm going to need to.
Yeah.
There's a number
thinking
of...
I could get by without it, but...
There's a number of very good architects you're in
Minnesota,
so I don't know as much about Minnesota, but my nephew worked as an architect in Minnesota for many years, so if you'd like, send me an email and I'll check with him and see if I can find you good recommendations.
Yeah, I really appreciate that. What was your email address again?
You can send it to Ken, K-E-N, at adamsofmadison.com. A-D-A-M-S, spelled like the president, not the family.
And if you Google Minnesota Association of Architects, you will reach their office, and you can ask at that office about people who have done a lot of earth-bermed or earth-sheltered homes.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
And the state, almost every state in the United States has a state version of the American Institute of Architects. Mm-hmm. And it's always a good place to go to find an expert. They'll do a bunch of legwork for you.
Yeah, there you go. Thank you very much, and good luck.
Yeah, that sounds like a fun project.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. It's west of Madison. It was about 20 miles. There's almost a little community of earth. Yeah.
I think they were built in the 80s, weren't they?
I think 70s and 80s. Yeah. And originally it was all to be earth berm, but I think after that they opened it up to more traditional building as well.
Yeah, but there are several earth bermed homes right together.
Highway 14, isn't it, I believe?
Yeah.
Yes.
Highway 14. Facebook question from Kyle. Do you know if a home size anaerobic digester is allowed in Wisconsin instead of a septic tank? This would be on 5 acres of land.
There are anaerobic systems that are out there that are legal to use in Wisconsin. Basically, what you have is you have an air pump, and the systems are really quite efficient. The filters on them need much less maintenance. Talk to one of your local septic people, and he can make sure that it meets all of the codes. But it's a nice, long-lived system. Costs more to go in initially, but especially if you're on a mound, you may find that your system could last 50% longer with a real anaerobic. But be careful on what you're sold. There are things out there that really are not true aerobic systems.
Yeah, so be careful. And Diane has an old three-season porch that with chipboard as the bottom layer, floors insulated, and there's a crawl space with a plastic sheet vapor barrier on the ground. Somebody told me the bottom chipboard layer will rot out. Is there anything I can do to prevent that? She was wondering about spray foaming in there.
Well, that just covers up the problem at this point. If it's a screen porch and it's truly open to the outside, boy, I'll tell you, that's really not a good first layer. Think of something that you might be able to do? I take it this thing's all been put together already. And
sounds like it. So yeah, it's an old three-season porch.
Yeah, I don't know whether we have a crawl space underneath, if this is up on piers, so I'm not sure we have enough information.
Yeah.
All right. And you guys have been busy, by the way?
Yeah. I mean, it's, coming out of the holiday season, life is good. There's a lot of people talking to us. We're working at full tilt, and hopefully we'll be going for a long time to come.
Right. And John, same with you.
We've been pretty busy. The home market has been very strong for January and February, and there's been a tremendous amount of commercial real estate changing hands as well. And we get brought in, especially when people are buying things that are very old. There seems to be a lot of very old things that have been selling the last couple of months.
Including a couple of guys in this room.
John Freiberger of Freiberger & Associates, Ken Adams of Adams Design Construction in Madison, our guests. They'll be back again. We'll do it all over with them. Thank you for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.